Okay. Can you guys hear me? Is it okay?
Yeah, that's good.
Okay.
Yeah, if that one could just go on your left side. There's a bit of interference earlier.
Okay. So, can you test this now, or?
Yeah, is it's already working. It's good.
Okay, is it okay?
Mm-hmm.
Well. Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay, there's a couple of minutes still, I guess,
yeah,
so. Do we have any laser pointer in here, or?
I haven't seen one being used. No.
Yeah, anyways.
Thing around here yesterday.
Yeah, I think I'd go on and get started.
Sure.
So, good morning, everybody. Thanks for attending. My name is Rafał Jaworowski, and I will be trying to describe to you today a new technology that that we have developed for FreeBSD and have integrated this with the environment of embedded FreeBSD. So, the technology is the flattened device tree. And the plan for today's presentation is that I will start with some definitions and an overview for you who are not aware of this thing. And I will then move on to describe how did the integration process happened and what particular areas of the kernel and surroundings were changed and what particular aspects. So we'll be talking about tools involved, the environment, FreeBSD loader, and then the core of this work associated with FreeBSD kernel. And after that, I will give you some highlight and overview how this technology can be used in day-to-day use and from high-level perspective. And by the end, I will tell a quick summary where we are where we are so far now, with support on some ARM and PowerPC examples. So this whole technology and the context is mainly associated with embedded FreeBSD use and embedded FreeBSD variations. Let me try to explain what is the problem that we are trying to resolve here. So unlike the PC and Intel world, in the embedded space, there is no standards and there is no established ways of doing things in terms of design of particular devices because of the great variety of chips being found and the many architectures and the surrounding and accompanying components. So they can be interconnected in many ways. The chips are flexible on the one side, and then we've got a number of implementations and a number of particular devices that use the same silicon chips, but in a different way. They use interconnects differently, they use resources differently, and as I said, unlike the PC world, there's nothing like a typical embedded system. So this is one of the aspects of the problem here. So which is particularly visible and when we talk about non-self-enumerable devices, we all know buses like USB and PCI, which can self-enumerate and self-configure in runtime, so that the slave devices are assigned resources in a non-conflicting way. There are certain and many buses and many peripherals which are not self-enumerable, and this is the main problem here, that we have to have a way to describe the system that composes that is composed of a number of various elements. So the other aspect in the embedded space is that there is usually very simplified booting environment. So the firmware and bootloaders, the first stage bootloaders, are very simple. And there's no way for them to pass any information about underlying hardware to the OS, to the kernel, about its hardware resources and how they are actually used. So this is another problem. And the challenge is how can we describe those hardware resources in a portable way that can be used by any embedded architecture and any firmware that can be found there. examples of problems that we have to resolve in the embedded space are, for example, memory assignment. We can have registers memory mapped in certain ranges of the address space. We have network MAC engines that are bound to some PHY chips, and these PHY chips are identified by an address. They are programmable, but there's no way for the kernel to know how these elements are interconnected and identified. There is a very important aspect of interrupts hierarchy of the system. When we can have a number of interrupt controllers in the system, and the IRQ lines can be routed in various ways from peripheral devices to the interrupt controller. And this is another area that of knowledge of configuration that cannot be discovered from anywhere else in runtime by the kernel. So there's many other aspects like the general purpose pin assignment and simple buses. Simple bus address assignments as well. So in current FreeBSD, in embedded FreeBSD architectures, we have some partial resolutions to these problems. There's many approaches with on ARM, on MIPS, on PowerPC. They are all very similar. They are doing pretty much the same thing, but in a slightly different way, mostly incompatible. So we are mostly based on a configuration table driven that is embedded in the kernel somehow, or we directly hard code stuff in the kernel at the moment. There is also a helping mechanism of device hints that you can be aware of, but it's inappropriate. It's too simple, and it doesn't let us resolve the many complicated aspects like interrupts routing and stuff like that. So we need to have a way, some other way to describe computer hardware resources in this situation. And flattened device tree is an attempt to resolve such problems. The concept has been around for a couple of years now, and it's been deployed by the industry. One of its usages is the PowerOrg organization, who embraced this standard as their embedded power architecture platform requirement specification document. So this is a concept that we can find in the industry already. It is independent. It fills out all these requirements that we would like to have. Like, it's independent of any firmware. It's independent of architecture, so it can be portable and used in many environments. The central idea is inherited from open firmware specification, and in particular, it's based on its device tree notion. However, the important thing about FDT is that it does not require the full open firmware implementation, so it can be used independently on any in a very simplified environment, but much providing means to convey this configuration information, much like if we had an open firmware underneath. So how FDT works in just a few basic words. So there is a human readable representation of hardware resources in a computer system, which is textual description basically. When we say that such and such device has those resources and how they are interconnected in the system, this human readable text is then converted to some binary form, and this is the. This process is called compilation, but it basically converts this text file into a binary object, which is the flattening process of the device tree. So, and any consumer of the device tree information, like the kernel and its drivers, will be using this device tree blob to parse and fetch information out of it. So this is a rough idea how it works. So we will have a number of entities here. So first is this device tree source, this human description of a computer system. We then have this device tree blob, which is just a binary version of it for compactness. and ease of use. The important note is that DTB internally is big endian, so any platform that would need to use this data needs to have some accessor code that would convert to any host order of bytes. But inherently, the device tree blob is big endian. And in order to convert this source to binary, we need a tool which will be the device tree compiler. On top of that, we got, because all of these elements are just tools to convey this data. However, there's a question: how do we know to describe the system? And there needs to be some conventions and the ways. How should we express this this information in this human readable form, and the so-called bindings definitions define those conventions, and the specification that I mentioned, the ePaper from Power.org, is just this bindings definition. It tells that in order to describe a network interface, you have to create a node and provide it with such and such properties and such name and so on. So we need to have a way, or we need to have some reference definition how to come up with such description of hardware. And this is the example. This is a snippet of a typical device tree source. As you can see, this is a CPU's nodes, which represent CPUs present in a system. In this case, we just have one CPU, but if you had many, it would have an additional units and additional instances of such descriptions back-to-back on it. So the device tree node has some type. It's got a number of properties specific to this particular node. So in case of a CPU, we have information about cache sizes and things like that. We also can see a memory representation node, which describes how much memory RAM in the system is present. And this is a very simple example, but you can have a number of entries if the available memory is segmented somehow and it's not contiguous. So we can express very complicated scenarios this way. Another example is an interesting entity which will be very often seen in embedded systems. And in here, this is the textual representation of an integrated system-on-chip device. So we can see a node which is SoC device type. It has a compatible property, which I will mention later, because it's an important property. And we've got ranges of address space that is used by this particular subsystem. And as you can observe, we can have subnodes in it. So we've got all the integrated peripherals on a chip, like I2C controller, or the more elaborate, like the Ethernet, and many more, will be the subnodes of the SoC here. So as you can also observe, the leaf nodes of these peripherals, they can have various resources besides the address ranges and address offsets. The interesting example is of usage of the interrupts. As we can observe, in both of these cases, these devices have some interrupts associated with them, and the interrupt lines are specified in this description. And it also points to a master or the parent interrupt controller entity with this interrupt parent thing. So in case we've got a number of interrupt controllers in the system, we can do very complicated configurations thanks to this scheme. So how did we go with integrating this approach, this technology from with FreeBSD? So the overall plan was, because as I mentioned, the FDT concept and technology has been around for a couple of years already. So there are components and there is material and code already available. So we have leveraged almost anything that was available to the extent possible and needed in the FreeBSD context. So we primarily reused the DTC package written by, David Gibson and John Lolliger. And the main component of this package is the device tree compiler tool, which basically allows for this conversion of the human readable description to the binary form. But also a very interesting and helpful element in this package is the helper library, libfdt, which allows any consumer code to parse and process the device tree blob, fetch information out of it, possibly modify it. We will see examples of these usages soon. But this was very helpful and very good for starting with the technology. We wanted to stay compliant with any existing FreeBSD internal interfaces and representations. So we will see how this was achieved, but this was one of the goals of this project. And we started with baseline code of FreeBSD current, and we used just the existing build environment, nothing special here. So roughly the integration areas of the technology with FreeBSD environment was the following. You can break it down into the build system part. We also had to extend and rework the FreeBSD bootloader. And the main work was associated with the kernel itself. So we'll see each of those steps in more details. But as far as the build system goes, we added a with FDT knob, a new option to the build, so that whenever FDT technology is required, the FreeBSD build world supplied with a new option will produce this new tools in the first place. So that the DTC utility is part of the USR SBIN installation. And the important note about DTC tool is that it needs to be part of the bootstrap stage, because we cannot rely on the build host to already have the DTC. So we build DTC as many other bootstrap tools like make, config, for example. On platforms, on embedded platforms that feature FreeBSD loader, we will see how this was modified. But you need to know that it's not that common in the embedded space to have loader available, because there are very simplified situations that prevent the possibility to have loader running on those. Yes.
What's the license of the DTC and libfdt?
Okay. The license is mixed. The DTC tool is a GPLv2, but the libfdt is BSD licensed. So we could the libfdt could be safely made part of the kernel, for example. But the DTC is pretty much the same situation as, I don't know, GCC or other GPLv2 components of the system. And So we reuse the libfdt inside the loader to be able to parse and modify the device tree blob. And we also reuse the same code in the FreeBSD kernel, so it can also traverse the device tree and fetch information out of it. Before we discuss those areas in more detail, let me explain to you some more generic aspects of the situation here. We have substantially two usage scenarios, mainly because of this situation with embedded systems, that we cannot always have the loader, the FreeBSD loader running on the system. So we will have two fundamental scenarios when we can treat the device tree blob as a standalone entity, which will be handled by the loader and provided to the kernel at boot time. And the second scenario is with simplified environments when there is no loader. So we need to have a way to pass the device tree blob to the kernel anyways. And this will be done through a statically embeddable device tree blob. So it will be part of the FreeBSD kernel image. So we do not have to rely on any entity like loader. Although the important note is that in both of these cases, the device tree blob has to be created and supplied beforehand, because as we mentioned, we talk mainly about non-enumerable resources. So there's still so this still applies. We need to come up with a description of a given particular system in advance first, and create this device tree blob, which is only used basically by the loader or statically embedded. So returning to the loader itself, as in many other cases, we wanted to leverage existing mechanisms that are available in FreeBSD environment. So we treat the DTB file as yet another type of FreeBSD kernel module, which is just a raw content. And it can be loaded and unloaded in a standard way by the user, or done automatically through some scripting and forth if needed. And on top of that, we introduced a dedicated FDT command to the loader in order to let the user interactively manage the device tree blob. So we can inspect it, we can modify it. I won't be delving into much details of all of those commands, but as you can observe from just the names, it lets you to modify the device tree, add new nodes, delete nodes, add properties, rename them, a lot of operations. So a couple of examples. On the top, you can see how do we manually load a device tree binary blob into memory. So it's treated like a kernel module. So it is shown with the lsmod command, for example, and so on. You can inspect the integrity of the loaded blob and check its header if all the checksums are okay and things like that. So we can see what properties a given node has and change them on the fly if needed. So all this can be performed by an interactive user before the kernel is booted. This is an example of a device tree in its entirety with an ls command. Those of you who are familiar with open firmware, the genuine open firmware, it's much like just an open firmware device tree. So this déjà vu effect will be perpetual here, because there's so many similarities and core ideas shared among those approaches. So let's now talk about the core of this development, which means what kernel changes were required to switch to this new technology. So there was a couple of major areas that were developed and which were somehow extended, changed, or adapted in order to get the FDT running. So we needed to adjust and extend the early system initialization code of the kernel bootstrap. As you can imagine, with the old approach, when we had configuration data either hard-coded somehow or taken from hints or from some configuration tables, which were eventually also hard-coded somehow, we needed to remove all of those and make the code more flexible, not to rely on anything embedded in the kernel, but we had to convert it to something that would fetch dynamically from the supplied device tree blob. We had to integrate the FDT FDT infrastructure with the existing open firmware framework that is present in the FreeBSD kernel already. We didn't want to develop anything that would copy existing stuff or just do yet again similar things. The objective here was to seamlessly integrate with existing frameworks, and because FDT is so much similar to open firmware, it was natural to try to come up with an integration and tight connection between those, especially that those existing pieces of code are very much helpful because we can easily do the same operations regardless of if it's the genuine open firmware or just FDT scheme underneath. So besides that, we also had a challenge to integrate FDT based representation of resources and translate those to native FreeBSD NewBus conventions of device drivers representation. So this was a very important aspect of this project. And in the end, we had to adjust the existing end device drivers, the leaf drivers, to make use of the new scheme. So this is the main breakdown. And a couple of words about this open firmware infrastructure already present in FreeBSD kernel. So this is mostly, so far, it's been mostly used on PowerPC, Apple Macintosh machines, Spark, possibly IBM Power machines as well, although FreeBSD is not running on IBM yet. Because of the close relationship of FDT, as I mentioned, we tried to stay in tight integration with these frameworks. But the important limitation is that it only pertains to the device tree piece of the open firmware interface. Those of you who know open firmware are aware that besides just representation of the device, it provides to the user many other services. Like it lets the client code to do certain operations, or the client, maybe the other way around. The client code can do operations on real devices via open firmware service calls. So these aspects do not apply to FDT case because fundamentally FDT is just a piece of data, nothing more. So while it's got many similarities to open firmware, it is something really something else. It is not the same as open firmware. So the interfaces which we talk about are the OFW calls, the virtualized K object based interface, which allow low level access to those open firmware calls API, and you may ask why these virtualizations were really needed. This is because open firmware is primarily a specification which can have many implementations, and there are cases from vendors like Apple, like Sun, IBM, and they have different implementations which can be seen even on the client side. So the client needs to somehow, in certain cases, be aware about various very subtle differences between open firmware implementations. And because of that, FreeBSD grown a object-oriented separation layer because of those. So that the consumer code does not need to worry about those subtle differences that are still visible, and it can be used uniformly. So So this is the reason why they were brought into operation at some points. And we with FDT just reuse this and plug into those frameworks to be compliant. And as such, FDT development concentrated mostly in the first place as providing a backend implementation to the OFW method interface. So instead of calling a real API to open firmware, we just fetch data from the device tree blob in those cases. And we reuse the existing OFW bus by higher level FDT infrastructure just for simplicity and a convenience they provide. So the client code at some point does not even realize that it's dealing with something else that a genuine open firmware as far as the device tree retrieval is concerned. As I mentioned, it doesn't apply to those IO memory management and other active features of real open firmware. So in those cases, the interface returns error. If anybody would like to test it on with FDT backed platform, so it'll return error and do nothing. So the demo of this integration and to show you how powerful this virtualization technique is and what benefit it gives. This is an example of using an existing and long existing tool, OFW dump, which is a user space tool which allows to retrieve data of the open firmware device tree. And this is an example of a flattened device tree-backed implementation. And the tool is working unchanged. It just doesn't realize that it's working underneath with some data and not a real open firmware. So how did we integrate the FDT infrastructure and technology with FreeBSD, NewBus, hierarchy, and device drivers representation? So as I mentioned, there is a number of on-chip abstractions and on-chip models existing in ARM, in various ARM maps and PowerPC code. So we can see a number of very similar bus device drivers that roughly do the same, but in a slightly different manner. They are not compatible, and they've got their own deficiencies, and they basically repeat the same thing in some way. So the main approach and the main objective of this project was get rid of those multiple approaches and come up with a uniform scheme that everybody would use. Any of those ARM, MIPS, Xscale, whatever variation, and just use one common code. So in this project, there was created a kernel infrastructure for FDT support, which is compliant with NewBus requirements and specification, and it basically replaces all those and provides two new entities, which is FDT bus and simple bus, which I will discuss in details further on. So these are abstract bus drivers, and the infrastructure also allows modularity. So if a given platform needs to do something really specific, there are means and provisions to plug and provide some callbacks and fix-ups that can be called on behalf of a particular platform if it needs really to do something very specific. But it's a very rare case, actually. So for over 10, no, not 10, but almost 10 platforms that we've got, it's just one or two fix-ups were required so far. But we've got this modularity and plug-in scheme, so it can be utilized. So this is an overview of the new scheme hierarchy. So you can see the FDT bus, which is the focal point of connection with Nexus, and then we have all the other elements of the system, with simple bus grouping the on-chip integrated peripherals. I will tell more about this in a minute. So the FDT bus is a direct replacement of those legacy approaches, and it's got a number of responsibilities. So at the new bus and Nexus probe and attach stage, it goes over the flattened device tree blob, and for each first level node, it adds a representative in terms of a new bus child on it. So we have a direct relation between FDT nodes and new bus children, and it translates resources information, because as we could observe, the FDT has its specific way of describing resources. So the FDT bus driver, it takes out all this information from in the device tree blob format, and it converts it to FreeBSD native NewBus, and it creates the well-known resource lists and attached to those NewBus children, so they can be requested later on when the driver initializes. So this is actually, all these are not seen at the driver level. The driver is not aware about those, the end drivers for the peripherals, and it feels like if it were any regular bus like PCI, for example, or something, that it can request its any resources from it, and it will the infrastructure bus will give it to it. So the FDT bus is managing IRQ, memory, and IO resources, and it's generic and flexible. It's meant to be common for any embedded platform, and we will see examples of this sharing. And there is a complementary bus driver, which is SimpleBus, and it is dedicated for an ePaper style SimpleBus node, which describes the on-chip peripherals, integrated peripherals, most commonly found on many system-on-chip devices like interrupt controllers, Ethernet, anything you can think about it that is typically found on a system-on-chip. So it's apparent to these subnodes, and it doesn't manage resources by itself. So it passes the requests from its children. It basically reflects how the FDT source is structured, but it is not a strict requirement. Actually, if you wanted to lay out your FDT source differently, you can do so. It's just following the ePaper style specification. If you've got some other bindings definition, if you like, you can do so. So it's a thin layer, actually. It's just an umbrella device. So yeah, once again, you can see this hierarchy. So we've got SimpleBus and a bunch of peripherals underneath. So let's see how these worlds of FDT and FreeBSD NewBus connect. So we could see the SimpleBus node representation, and on the right you can see how FreeBSD kernel sees this hierarchy after all this infrastructure has done its work. So we have just regular NewBus hierarchy with FDT bus on top, directly attached to Nexus, and we've got the SimpleBus seen at certain stage here as well. So as you can also see, those peripherals that are subordinate to the SimpleBus can be also seen as subordinate to in the NewBus in the NewBus tree here. So the last stage of getting the system to run with fully FDT driven model was conversion of the individual drivers in the system, those that were subject to this project, which is those couple of ARM and PowerPC platforms. So in order to have a platform, a new device made compliant with FDT approach, you first have to sit and create this human readable description file of this particular device or board or something. So this is an initial step. Once this is done, you can reuse the FDT bus and simple bus infrastructure to work to do the groundwork for you and do the instantiations of those children. And you can only concentrate on the end leaf device. And in this case, if you're lucky enough, if the device is relatively simple, the work here is really minimal. Because from the device driver perspective, all the infrastructure is just it doesn't differ from its previous state actually with the old approaches. So the drivers would ask for resources from its parent bus, and in this case this is just a different parent. We'll have to declare the driver as a simple bus child, for example, and. In addition to this, we need to modify a probe routine to check for compatible property. As I mentioned, the compatible property in the device tree is pretty important because it lets the device driver identify that it really is the device driver for this particular node or not. So the FDT side of the description of the resources, it will have a mandatory compatible property, which can have. We note that we only check for just one textual. The compatible property is a text string, so we check just for one particular. But the compatible property can actually have a multiple entries, so the device drivers can attach to certain set of nodes, actually. So these are the minimal steps. If you're lucky enough, there's nothing much to do, but some drivers need more work if they're more complicated, like the bus drivers, in particular PCI or local bus drivers. They are more elaborate. I will not go into details of converting this because there's no common way of converting these. You just need to rework them substantially. But this is done. So how do we use the FDT technology from a high-level perspective? We said that there are these two modes of operation, and they are pretty important and will be reflected in the newly introduced kernel options, for example. So, also as a note, part of FDT is introducing a new location in the FreeBSD source tree, where we will be storing the DTS source files. The DTS source files will be automatically converted at the kernel build time. When we build a kernel, it will look out if it's FDT enabled, of course. It will look out for an associated DTS file and try to convert it to its binary. If we additionally want the DTB to be statically embedded in the kernel, it will do so for us. So in order to facilitate these two approaches, we introduced the basic FDT support, which is option FDT. It introduces and builds all the infrastructure that I talked about. The FDT bus, the simple bus, the libFDT is included into the build, and all the building blocks, say. On top of that, we've got FDT DTS file make option if it's provided. The build system will try to find this DTS file in that directory, of course, and try to convert it to the DTB using the device tree compiler. So now you can see that we need to make sure that the DTC compiler is there. So this is the reason why we build it as a bootstrap tool, because we cannot rely on the build host to have it always by itself. And in case of a statically embedded DTB, this option is actually mandatory, because when we want to statically embed the blob in the kernel, it has to exist somewhere. So it will complain, the build system will complain if we enable the static mode and do not provide an existing DTS file. So the current setup state as it is now, we have the Freescale MPC85XX, which is the part Quick 3 family, converted entirely. So we now have it running entirely of an FDT driven environment. All the existing peripheral drivers were converted. The same situation is with the three Marvell ARM families, i.e. Orion, Kirkwood, and Discovery Innovation families. And while with Freescale, which are PowerPC-based, we had the luxury of reuse existing DTS file descriptions which are provided from the vendor, which, by the way, was kind enough to relicense it for us. We worked with Freescale to have DTS files for MPC85XX relicensed into a BSD licensed mode. So with Marvell ARM, we are pioneering FDT deployment on ARM architecture in general. So we had to come up with a fresh set of DTS files, which sometimes, because we mainly use the EPUPper style of definition of resources, but we at certain points there was no equivalent or relevant device tree bindings definitions, so we had to come up with specific bindings for those. So we now have a number of platforms running completely of an FDT driven data.
Questions now or at the end?
We are close to the end.
Okay. It's a quick question on the bindings you created.
Yeah.
Are those documented?
Yes. Yes, that they are kept in the same directory as the DTS files, so they are for now they are FreeBSD specific. But there is a movement within device tree folks, because the technology is used independent of any, can be used independent of any operating system. It has been mainly used on PowerPC Linux in the previous years. But we now introduce ARM and PowerPC and FreeBSD support in general. So these hopefully will be published or put somewhere for discussion and reuse for some wider audience. So that's the plan.
So there's
a couple of benefits from this technology, very important ones actually, which let us get rid of those many problems of hard coding configuration stuff in the kernel, and the maintenance hell of the things that Warner described yesterday, that there is just a minor change in the hardware and you need to rebuild the kernel because of the very minor change. With technology of this kind, you do not have to do this. You just supply an updated configuration data. So it encourages, as mentioned previously, it's independent of architecture, and we have shown that it can work reliably on ARM and PowerPC, and it can do on anything else, basically. And it encourages code sharing. The FDT infrastructure itself is common, and it can be used with various environments, but we can also, all these, for example, it may be not that that great an example or very I don't know. The thing is that all these platforms that I have shown you, all these ARM and all these PowerPC that we have converted, they use a single instance or the same shared code of UART attachment, for example. This is maybe a tiny and simple thing, but it shows how we can reuse more complicated scenarios. It's just a tiny piece of code, actually very simple, but almost any existing variation, any existing port of ARM or MIPS has its own pretty much the same code. So this lets us compress this and collapse into just one piece of code, which is great. The technology enables us with a multi-platform kernels, which is a very important feature, so that you can have a single image that is ready to work on various platforms when supplied with just a proper configuration data, the device tree blob with it. So this can be practically seen with the already ported platforms, like those PowerPC, PowerQuick 3D, MPC 85XX. So they are different machines. So the older one are single core, the newer one are dual core, and there is just a single kernel that you can run on both. Just supply the proper configuration data to them. And the same goes for the ARM. We've got now six Marvell ARM platforms converted. And one of those needs to have an embedded device tree blob in it, but the remaining five are essentially the same binary that runs with just a different particular configuration data with it. So it's a great win. And although it doesn't come for free, as always. So we have additional dependencies in terms of external tools from some vendor. And we need to put some additional work in the maintenance of the device resources and possibly bindings. As I mentioned, they can be reused by various operating systems. So we need to keep track on those, and we need to adjust the DTS files. It is also that EPUPR, the specification, it also evolves. It is now version 1.0 stable, but there will be some updates, so we need to keep track of those and act accordingly. So what to do next? We need to adopt to more embedded platforms, MIPS, other ARM, PowerPC. There is a couple of items that can be still improved. With the advent of FDT, we do not no longer need the device hints. So device hints should be made optional in general, so that platforms using FDT can opt it out. There are some minor things as well. Yeah, I wanted to thank the FreeBSD Foundation, who was kind enough to sponsor work on this project. I would also like to thank Warner Losh, who was technical advisor and reviewer of the project. Nathan Whitehorn, who put a lot of work into virtualizing the OF layers, and it was a great help. We could just plug into this, and it seamlessly provided us with many tools, as you could observe with the OFW dump command, for example. But there are other not easily visible. So Phil Brownfield helped us with relicensing existing DTS files to be BSD rather than GPL. So yeah, a couple of folks on my team back home, Lukasz and Michał, who put a lot of work in doing this great work. So that's it. If you have any questions. Yeah?
So I was thinking about that this kind of approach may be helping situations of x86 where the SPI and the BIOS are bugged. Have you ever thought about using the FDT?
Yeah, it can be used in those situations as well. Although with the PC world, the x86, It's so much easier in general because there is standardized BIOS and ACPI, which provide most of this information. But yes, in case it's buggy or lies about some things, you can you could use this.
And still in the about this topic, basically, NewBus is growing up the concept of multipass and results compilation that are used just to fix problems on X.AUTOSAY and AMD64 for buggy ACPI and BIOS. Mm. I'm not sure if you already saw some patches about that, and if you think to integrate the job on this part.
Yeah, I saw John's work on the multipass thing, but I don't think it interferes with this at all.
Yeah,
it's not. It's something orthogonal, I guess. But with the x86, please note that this is primarily targeted towards embedded world. Yeah. There are platforms in the embedded world based on x86 that do not have BIOS or a typical BIOS that could benefit from this as well. Yes, Warner. Yeah, if we had some additional tools, for example, if we had a tool that would read out ACPI information and, I don't know, convert it to an FDT style, we could use this entirely and maybe adjust something that is not true. This would definitely work, but this means a replacement. You would need to use FDT instead of ACPI,
right.
Which I'm not sure how ACPI... How deeply is it integrated? It probably might not be that easy. I'm not sure. Yeah, although the problem with the loader is that it doesn't have any other sources of information. It cannot synthesize the FDT for itself, so it would have.
Like we could take ACPI and
FDT. Oh yeah, yeah. If the loader.
X86 produce an
FDT, oh yes. Oh yeah, exactly. Yes, that would be possible. If the loader on x86 would be able to convert ACPI on the fly to an FDT and provide this device tree to the kernel, it would work. Yes. Yes. Yes, but this is the, as I call it, the genuine open firmware. It's just a full implementation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I device broken. You've told there to use it some strings to identify devices, to match drivers to devices.
Yeah.
Are they somehow standarded between platforms, vendors, or other things? So with PCI we have registered IDs, but what's here?
It doesn't rely on any namespace. It's rather defined by the binding definition. But it usually if there are some specific nodes, let me show you this example. So it can convey the vendor info as well, like the I2C has the compatible, which is FSL, meaning Freescale I2C. It can have additional properties like the version of it. Can have some additional things on it. So it's nothing that you have to register somewhere in some central location. So it's all text based, but there isn't the binding definition says. What should be if a given node is compatible with such and such definition, it has to, I don't know, implement those features. So that's how it looks like. So there isn't also any formal way of dealing with this. It's still kind of growing. And the community around device tree is just growing. So we do not have any formal body, for example, to discuss this. But there are movements towards having a central wiki that people would provide new binding definitions for review. And then when there is a consensus, it'll be made reviewed before the draft and so on. So it's currently no, there isn't any formal way of doing things. Any other questions? No, so thank you for your attention.